Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall. Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. In this episode, Alex forgets to get John to record a table of contents. We start off with some store championship and FFG news, mostly about their new website. We then review the newest chapter pack, The Veilmen, and close off promoting this coming weekend's events.
Alright, John, so this is episode 5. I actually had to look it up. We're back at the zone where I don't automatically know what episode we're on.
That's probably a good zone. It means that you're actually involved in Thrones again.
So, news this week, there's actually been a couple of official stories coming out of FFG. The first one this week, and I was really pleased with this, was they posted an article talking about how there were going to be West Coast shipping delays due to dock worker strikes and issues on that, and explaining some of the products would be delayed because of this. This is the first time we've seen them do this.
And I think it's great, because now the community knows what to expect, and we're not going to be all mad when certain stores get a product and the other stores are waiting forever, because they'll realize that it's not FFG's fault.
Yeah, I think, in this case, I think it's stuff into their warehouse, not... Okay. I don't think one store
will get the product.
Exactly, yeah. But I'm wondering if this is a follow-up from that Star Wars petition that they gave an answer to, but maybe this is a direct answer to that.
I mean, this would be great, I think, in general, for the community to know what's going on. I mean, I'm not going to be mad with them now because I know what the problem is, and it's not their problem.
Also, don't affect Thrones.
Yeah, well, you know.
Second is, have you been to the FFG site recently?
Yeah, and I was sorry I went.
You were sorry you went?
Yeah, it was very plain looking. My Firefox crashed after a few seconds. So I'm not sure if it wasn't tested at all the different browsers or what's going on there. Like, I am a couple updates behind, but I was kind of disappointed. I mean, it's a lot cleaner looking. I was just disappointed that my browser of choice didn't run on it.
I think it's a little more fitting with their color for their event center and their logo and things like that. But it is a little bit plainer. It looks like it's more mobile-friendly, which doesn't matter to me at all.
It was definitely designed to be able to go on your phone.
But I did notice, so I was visiting some of the other sites that weren't Game of Thrones-related, and they now have this, all the other card games have this sort of showcase page, which I find really annoying. I don't know if you have seen that, but it's like you scroll through and the image in the background changes every time you scroll through another little segment. Anyway, for some reason, this seems to be a fad. I don't know what they're called. I've seen them on other sites, and I find them really irritating.
What I did see was a big section on Thrones 2.0 on the site, and that was exciting.
It's got, you mean, forms, the same place section that was there before?
Well, I don't know. I didn't go before. Their site sucks so bad.
I do have a question. If you load up the site right now, and you go to the Game of Thrones card game, the support page, and you try and download the FAQ, are you seeing the 5.31 again? I've cleared my cache, I've done all the usual stuff, and I cannot get the new FAQ to load. So I think in upgrading their site, they fell back in FAQ.
18th December 2014, oh yeah. You were correct.
So. All right, well, we'll make sure to submit that as a report. That's rather nasty. So, I don't even know what meta we're playing in anymore.
No, it seems it's reverted. They didn't like the last one. Because in a tournament, if you were running a tournament this weekend, if I showed up and I brought a deck...
This is clearly a mistake. I mean, I'm sure...
I understand that, but if I showed up at the tournament and my deck was, you know, this 18th of December 2014 legal, what would you do? Would you disqualify me?
No,
that seems wrong to me.
I'd probably allow it.
I'd have to allow it, too. So they need to fix that because it's going to screw up their tournaments.
However, in theory, we're in a new FAQ. And a new FAQ means a new Annals and Cabinet Annals. For version 5.4. So I updated that. Barely any changes, so it doesn't change much for users. But I updated this on Tuesday, and I already have, without asking anyone for a tournament, 7 tournaments in there and 2 promised to me by the end of the day.
That's great.
This is really what I wanted the Annals to be, something that didn't involve me constantly pestering people. So I think I've hit the right threshold of pestering people, and now it's snowballed.
So I think the super fun but very small Ottawa tournament's already in there.
That's right. That was the very first tournament to go in. It was the very first tournament under FAQ 5.4, because that was on a Tuesday, because you guys are strange. And it was another tournament won by John. So we'll move on. what did you take to that?
I took Greyjoy. I took a House of Dreams deck that ran the Longship Ironwind, location where you can jump in 2-cost characters, and my restricted was Maidensbane. So it was a really fun deck. People were calling it Fruity Pebbles because I had such a large array of out-of-house characters in it.
See, is this another people are calling it that only you're calling it and then hoping it catches on?
You'll have to find out. Like, I don't call it that. So that was actually Mike, the person that was running the tournament, coined that name.
Fruity Pebbles.
And I was like, Fruity Pebbles? What are you talking about? He's like, you know, pebbles, they're all different colors. I didn't even know what it was.
It's a kind of cereal, I'm guessing, no?
Like, yeah, it is.
Or something?
It is a cereal, but it was like, I'm too old for it, so I guess it came out after.
I never eat anything that doesn't look like dust with milk. So That sounds like an interesting deck. I would press you for details, but I know that that's actually someone else's creation, so we're going to see if we can get them on the cast in the next couple of weeks maybe to talk about it.
Yes, yeah. So someone from New York was kind enough to give me the base of that deck, and there's a few changes, but other than that, yeah, it's definitely someone else, so we should let them talk to it.
And there were actually a lot of tournaments I'd like to report on. Couple of them, but not all of them. Really, it's a terrible bias of ours, but we do have some friends of the show that specifically attended some tournaments. So, for instance, Aaron and Dave Stroms faced off in the finals of a tournament in New York. That was Aaron playing Martell Lufen Apart versus, again, the same deck you were playing, the Greyjoy House of Dreams Longship Ironwind.
Exactly.
Which, unfortunately, the Greyjoy lost that finals, but congratulations to Aaron. And another tournament, I got news from 2 tournaments in the UK, both of which frequent guests on the show, James Walmsley or JC Wama, attended. The first was the very first win of a major event by his girlfriend, Becky. So congratulations to her. And the second was won by Wedge, who also appeared on this show, playing Greyjoy LIV2, beating Stark Aloof and Apart. But James made top 4 with a Tully defense deck. Not just a Tully deck, but a Tully defense deck. And he says, if we're having a down week in the next couple of weeks, he'd love to come on and tell people how to do it right. After which I said, of course, surely doing it right would involve winning a tournament. But, you know, I guess you can't have them all.
Hey, James, burn!
Now, I'd like to go into some of the other tournaments, but really we have to play this pretty tight because we have a chapter pack review to fit in.
Which are always long.
Yeah. So we may get into a couple of more interesting results next week if we have the time. We are joined today for a chapter pack review of the very first chapter pack of the 5.4 FAQ meta by Jacob Kern from the Tulsa meta. And if I recall correctly, you were also the winner of the Tulsa Store Championship.
Yes, that's correct. I won just a few weeks ago playing the Lannister Knights, which I talked about on the other cast. And yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Wait a second. You were on the other cast?
Oh, no, that didn't happen. I'm sorry. I wasn't.
See, John doesn't listen, so it's, you could get away with anything. But I knew that you were... We're just trying to bring you over to the dark side, and then
we don't have guests from the other cast in our cast, right, Alex?
Well, we do, but then they never go back.
Oh, okay. As long as they don't go back, if
we're
they
just,
do,
we're poaching.
Dislike them. Yes. Okay.
Tradition is for the guest to go with the first card. This is also one that has been done on the other cast, but we'll pretend that never happened. Do you want to start us off with the first Barra card?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so it's a unique character, Sir Bryce Karen. It is 3 costs, 3 strength, military and power icon. It is a rainbow guard as well as a knight. It has the keyword joust and it challenges action. choose a Rainbow Guard character. That character gains renown until the end of the phase. Limit once per phase.
And any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I don't like it. It does have some uses, but, you know, when you look at what they've been doing with some of the other trait-based stuff this cycle, I just don't think it adds enough to Rainbow Guard, and that's my main beef with it. I'm sure we'll see some play. The three cost is great. You know, you could run it in Noble Cause, and he has renown as well, and then you can give renown to somebody else. I mean, it has uses. I don't like him very much.
I'm not sure you can give renown to somebody else in Noble Cause, though. I mean, you'd have to use trait manipulation.
Exactly.
Rainbow Guard. There isn't a Rainbow Guard.
True. Well, there you go. Yeah, so he just, yeah, he's just not very useful, in my opinion.
He just reads three cost, three strength, two monocons, joust, renown in my world. Like,
and joust is nice. Joust is nice, but...
What's coming to when a three cost, three strength bicon with two good keywords is mediocre and a good trait. But you're right. I agree with you guys.
I could see a knight's deck maybe tossing a copy in.
I don't like a three strength joust that much. I want to see a four strength joust. Then I'm excited.
Wasn't there something that keyed off joust? Yeah, the tourney grounds?
Oh, yeah, but that's bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I don't think you can make it good by...
It's just, again, not enough.
I think that is unfortunately the story of Sir Bryce Caron. He's possibly in a knight's deck. All right, John, speaking of not enough, why not give us the next card?
Storm ends.
I don't bias you at all.
Yeah, Storm ends, Free Rider. He's two cost. He's got a military and a power icon. He's an ally, a bannerman, and he has the text. Any phase, kneel one influence to stand him. Yeah, you could maybe figure out some combos with him.
Not well, in-house, though. I mean, in-house, if you think of some of the influence you might actually be running, you know, a Vanguard Lancer. I'm not going to kneel a two-strength Vanguard Lancer to stand a two-strength Bicon Storm's End Free Rider. That's just a joke.
No, but some knights actually run a more heavily influence-based build if they're trying to give, you know, intrigue icons with influence, if they're trying to use See Who Is Stronger, if they're trying to save lords with influence. Like, there's a couple other.
Yeah, but how much room do you have for non-knights in that deck?
Like I said, it'd have to be a very specific combo deck, Alex. Yeah, I'm going to stick with my original answer.
He definitely needs, you know, like you said, some sort of combo, maybe with the Bannerman, you know, maybe running the Free Cities to get the influence. I don't know. He works well with the new plot, which we'll get to later on. But even so, I just don't really see him seeing much play.
I mean, he's got a bad trait and a good trait. Oh, but the good trait doesn't really matter that much, because really the ones that count, the Bannerman of all of those, the Greyjoy one's the most important, and you're not running influence there either.
I got
you
it.
You might see him in a conquest deck, maybe. I don't know.
It's a heavy influence Baratheon deck using standing characters and other characters that you can deal influence to stand, and the event that you can pay influence to discard all the non-standers.
You're going to burn through all the
Storm the Gate?
Storm the Gate?
Yeah. That's a ridiculous deck. And I would never take him to a tournament. That's where he fits. Right there. He's in that deck.
Well, what I think he's supposed to fit in is Noble Cause.
And, I think so, too.
And that was the same thing with Core Renly, which is the... Or is that Core Renly? Or is that Knights of the Storm Renly?
Whatever, the Influence Standing Renly.
Yeah, the Influence Standing Renly.
Yeah, I can't recall exactly.
He was so good, they printed another copy of him here without the unique flag.
And without the immune to opponent's character abilities and so on.
Yeah.
And with an ally trait.
I tried running that Renly in Noble Cause because I thought he'd be amazing, and I would probably maybe try doing this as well, but it's really hard to run influence in that deck. You can't afford to choke up your one draw a turn. And so my verdict is I just think this guy is just shy of making it work. If he had the knight trade, if he had, you know, a little something extra...
Yeah, I think they tried to fill that hole with the Bannerman, but again, there's just, as we mentioned, there's not enough interaction, really, in anything that's going to do well.
Yeah.
I think the only way to use this card is some sort of infinite stand.
Which would be tough.
and would need to probably be a noble cause to at least get that renown.
Well, I mean, something where kneeling him fuels the effect of the deck, and then you can stand him, but it's, yeah, I think that's the only use.
Well, you've got the new Renly that kneels to reduce. I mean, there's things that it can do, but there's other things that can do those things better, I think.
Yeah.
All right, I get, oh, good. It's almost like timed it. I get to talk about Euron Crow's Eye.
I don't think you're allowed, because we know your opinion on this card. You don't like him as much as the other Eurons.
Exactly. all right, I'll read him out first. So he's 5 gold for a 4 strength tricon. He's a king, a raider, a captain. He's Euron Crow's Eye, and while he is attacking alone, opponents cannot declare defenders. Now, let's start with the goods. People have played with this guy in draft. He's very useful there. People talk instantly about putting support of Harlaw.
Every time you win the unopposed, he stands back up.
Yep.
And then getting a character that can win 3 unopposed challenges. Of course, at that point, you're paying 7 gold, 2 gold for an attachment, and 5 for a character with no immunities.
And also does not have renown.
But he also doesn't have the Ironborn trait. He doesn't have any crests, and he doesn't have any keywords. So,
but he's got the king trait, the raider trait, and the captain trait, which are 3 positive traits for Greyjoy.
Yes, captain is a phenomenal trait. That's right. It interacts with so many cards.
It interacts with the one that matters the most for him, the long ship that'll make him so he doesn't kneel.
Yeah.
Well, he would do that with raider anyway.
Exactly. Yep, that's right. What I was just going to say.
And honestly, even in the long ship brief deck, I would use another Euron.
I would as well. You know, I think this guy is a trap card. He is, in my opinion, a flashy effect on the surface, but when you get right down to it, I just don't see myself.
Did you just agree with Alex? You came on this cast and you agreed with Alex?
Oh my. I'll be insufferable. I'll be more insufferable. Okay, John, do you disagree?
Damn it. Well, it's not fun when we all agree, is what I'm saying.
I'll say this. I think that building something with support of Harlaw or something like that will be fun.
You're going to make me sound stupid on the cast now because I'm going to have to argue against it. All right. Euron's Crow's Eye is a really good card.
I do agree with you on that, John.
Just not this version.
It's just not better than the other Euron Crow's Eyes. Yep.
Okay. So where would... I think we all agree that he's not the best Euron Crow's Eye, but there's definitely probably some decks where he'd have a place. Maybe Conquest to Stark, where you're running some kind of king theme in order to play the big armies, and you want to search him out with Jane, things like that. But I think generally you don't play him that often. How about that? Do you guys think of any place where you'd slot him in?
If I was running a gimmicky, janky deck with support of Harlaw.
Okay.
Yeah, the build that you're on is really the only thing I see him being viable in, and I don't see that deck causing any problems with the good decks in the meta right now.
Anything with Neil, we'll just say goodbye to you. Anyway. All right, so Jacob, want to move on to the next card?
Okay, so another Greyjoy, this time non-unique character, Silence Crewman. He is 2 cost, 2 strength, military and intrigue. He is a raider. He has the stealth keyword and the text. At the end of any challenge phase in which Silence Crewman was not declared as an attacker, kill it and discard the top 2 cards of each opponent's deck. I like this guy a whole lot. I think he adds a solid icon spread, with especially related to his cost, to a raider deck, and I think he'll see play.
I'm going to disagree with you. I don't like him that much. I agree with you. The icon spread's super awesome. Stealth is great. There's too many ways in the current meta to stop a character from participating in a challenge. If he gets knelt, he's dead. His icon's removed, he's dead.
Well, yes. So then they're nailing this guy and not your big Euron Crow's Eye or whatever else. I don't know.
Typically, or whatever it was they were dealing with.
Yeah, but even if they're kneeling this guy instead of bigger guy, they're still getting card advantage from it because he's disappearing. Well, the Euron Crow's Eye will stand back up.
He could still be Claim Soak at that.
Sure, potentially. If you were going to be eating a military challenge anyways, it would be a lot less value. I agree with that.
I don't think he's great. Right on the cusp. I was playing 3 gold for 2 strength deadly in a raider.
Exactly, and now he's got 1 less gold, which I think really is a huge deal.
Oh, I agree. Like, he's a good card. I just don't think he's great.
Yeah, I think he's playable. I think he will see play. I think only in a in something that's using that Raider trait, probably.
Absolutely, yeah. He's specifically for Raider decks, which that's what this cycle is supposed to bring us, is the support for those themes, and this is actually something that plays well into the theme, unlike, say, the Rainbow Guard stuff we've seen previously.
Yeah.
This I definitely agree with.
All right. Well, John?
Oh, Gunther, son of Gurn. He is awesomely cool. First of all, his art's cool because he's got a sword with blood on it. So he's 4 cost, 3 strength, military power. He's got a limited response, and it's probably the best limited response we've seen so far. After you win a challenge with Gunther, son of Gurn, participate in draw cards, ignoring the draw cap until the losing opponent does not have more cards in hand than you. So as a clansman, in a clansman deck, this guy is awesome. Because clansmen are all about dumping their hand to get all these different advantages. And then if you can refill that hand after you've used most of your other guys to get those advantages, that's just amazing. So,
it's extremely powerful. Yes, yeah. I agree. I'm so excited about this card. I think it does. It's something that clansmen needs for sure.
Yeah.
They've gotten so much support, and I'm so excited to be playing some clansmen decks soon. And I hope that they can actually make it to where I might take it to a tournament.
Yeah,
I think they're there for sure.
You think they're there? I first of all, it's still missing a bloody comma between Gunther and Son of Gurn. And second, I know that there's a rules question that's already come up with him. I think by the time you're listening to this, it will have been answered because 2C1C reached out to me. But just to go over it in case they didn't cover it, the draw you get from him contributes to the draw cap.
Yes.
It just allows you to exceed it. So if you drew 2 cards, then you triggered him to draw 3, you can't draw another one afterwards. Just to make that clear. But my impression, and I haven't played with this card yet, and I may be horribly wrong, but by looking at the card, my guess is that you're going to be changing the way your opponent plays. You're not going to get a ton of draw out of it. But your opponent's going to hold back fewer cards, and I think you're going to have to milk that to your advantage, and there are lots of ways of doing that.
I would agree. And but clansmen run things like Fear of Winter, right?
True.
And then drop cards to fuel effects, and then draw back up and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. It could be strong that way as well.
Yeah, yeah, the only counter is mill. Mill is finally useful. No, I'm kidding. I think it's great design. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you'll see him in non-clansmen decks.
It's a limited response. He's 4 cost, but yes, you will.
Yeah, he'll see play. You know, Aloof likes it. I don't know if that means Aloof Clansman is the way to go with this trait-based deck, but it's certainly something that we'll see play and something that is very intriguing, and I'm excited to tinker with it and, as you say, play around it when my opponent plays it.
All right. The next Lannister card is Sir Ilyn Payne, 4 gold for 3 strength, military intrigue. He's a knight, he's House Payne, he's got a war crest, and in dominance, kneel Sir Ilyn Payne to choose and kill a kneeling character with printed cost 3 or lower. Now, the first thing I love about this is it's the first card in this pack to not have awful art. He's got a good trait, although I don't know if you'll be playing him specifically for the trait, given that he's 4 gold and you can't amass too many knights. It's kind of tough to tell yourself that you're not... I mean, he's sort of in the Mad King region, where are you really going to not use him in challenges to get that kill? Yeah, maybe, but then you're foregoing a 4 gold character in challenges. I think he falls just short of being playable. I think he's interesting, but I don't think I'm going to play him.
You know, I like him a lot, but I do have to acknowledge that the dominance phase action to kneel him, it's really a downside. When you look especially at that start guy we got a few packs back, he doesn't kneel to trigger his kill in dominance. And I really would have liked to have seen something like that on Ilyn Payne. However, I do acknowledge that this effect is more powerful and more easy to trigger, assuming that he's still standing. So, you know, I like him. He's good, but not exceedingly great.
Yeah, I have to agree. What decks do you think you're going to see him in?
He's going to be in the decks of anyone who really, 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 really wants to kill Dany.
Yeah. That's one of his.
Don't we all?
No, it won't, because he's going to die to Danny. You're right.
Yeah,
that'll be the first thing Danny kills.
Might be able to win that intrigue. I don't know. Maybe Neil are out first. Who knows?
I think it's good design. I like that they're making these three cost characters a little more vulnerable. I think that all of that's intelligent. I just don't think I can bring myself to pay 4 gold for a character I'm not using in the challenges phase.
If I'm running a Lupin apart, he's definitely in there times one at least. You know, he fits great in there. But yeah, I mean, outside of that, you know, I don't think I'd run him in Knights. He's too high cost for a Neil and Dominance effect, in my opinion. Okay, so we have an event. It is House Lannister only. Battle of the Green Fork. Has the plot, it's an epic battle I should start with, so it's a plot action. After the dominance phase this round, there's an epic phase during which each player may initiate a single military challenge with normal claim. During this epic phase, each unique clansman and mercenary character gains melee. Interesting.
If this wasn't House Lannister only, this would be amazing.
Absolutely, it would. I still think it might see play. You know, it's kind of unprecedented. You don't really see the epic battles out of Lannister. And when you compare it to other, like, clansmen synergizing events that we have that are basically not even worth playing, I think you could find room for a copy or two of this.
I mean, clansmen do have some effects where even if they're kneeling, they can defend military or participate in military in some cases.
Exactly.
Yeah, Tyrion's enforcers and Shaggy's on a Dolph, but
exactly,
you don't get enough out of the challenge to make it worthwhile.
It doesn't have another effect. The really good epic battles that are house specific have some other effect, like the intrigue one for Lannister lets you put an in-house character into play, and the Targaryen one discards attachments and stuff like that. I think the barrel lets you draw. If it had something like that.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you have clansmen, you're probably going to win a military battle, and he probably won't be able to win one against you, so he'll suffer military claim.
Well, let's say we're running clansmen, Fear of Winter. We play this before we flip our plot. You know, you've got 2 claim now. You've got 4 claim that can come through. I mean, it sort of has uses. I mean,
I don't think it's going to make the cut. I mean, you don't have enough of the epic battles to make that strategy worthwhile long term.
Lannister has so many good events.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, it's a tough spot. You know, I think I like that it is interesting, and I think it's worth exploring, at least for somebody like me who prefers playing Lannister and will try out the stuff. But yeah, I may end up finding that it's not useful. But I do like it, and I do like that it interacts better with a clansman deck than a lot of their past events have, in my opinion.
All right, John, want to give us the next one?
Sure. We have our first Sand Snake, Soren Martell now. Nymeria Sand. She is from Martell, obviously. Sand Snake and Bastard traits. She's 3 cost for 3 strength with a military and an intrigue icon. And she has the following limited response. After a Sand Snake character you control is killed, choose and kill a character with an equal or lower printed cost. Limited one, a limited response per round. She's awesome. I really like her.
I really like her.
She's like a blood for blood on herself, at least. And if you happen to have another Sand Snake, and soon I think we'll see more, she's great.
Yeah, she's amazing. I mean, imagine, you know, killing her and triggering blood for blood in addition to it. I mean, it's nuts. The potential for her, it's bonkers.
Yeah, I think we'll see at least one of in almost every Martell deck.
This card here, I remember in the last chapter pack review, I wasn't convinced the location that makes someone a Sand Snake was going to be worth it. Effects like these make me think it would be.
I could see that, you know. Turn your weenie into a Sand Snake, boom, you've got choice kill. I guess it's still dependent on the cost, but still, you know, it's definitely useful.
Yeah, if you're going to lose certain things like a Flea Bottom Scavenger anyway, taking out Claim Soak or forcing Gwendamyr to get saved or Aemon to get saved, all of these things can be pretty useful. I think this is just very, very Martell-y, very retaliation, you know, sort of retaliation. You start to fear declaring military challenges against them. And if your opponent starts getting into decision paralysis, you're already beginning to control the tempo. So I think that you're probably not playing the other Nymeria Sand that gives Sand Snakes military magnets and deadly. So no, this is a win and perfectly nice art.
Yeah, great card.
Unfortunately, I got a slightly less great card. So we have an opening gambit. This is a House Martell only event. Response, after you lose a challenge, choose a participating Sand Snake character you control to claim one power. Then, if this was the first challenge initiated this phase, stand that character and draw one card. And it's just not going to make the cut, ever. You have better events in Martell. Even in the ideal situation where you're claiming a power, standing your character, and it replaces itself, I think it requires a Sand Snake character. It had to have been the first challenge, so you had to have knelt the Sand Snake character just to oppose the challenge for no good
even
reason.
Even if it didn't have those restrictions.
If it wasn't, then if this is the first challenge initiated this phase, it has some ability to thin your deck more easily.
If so either one of those restrictions sort of went away, you still wouldn't do it.
If one of those restrictions went away, it would be borderline. Here, it's not even borderline.
Yeah. So, I mean, it can't go in. You need both restrictions removed.
Yeah, it is. It's very very specific in its wording, which makes it not very playable. I could see maybe a Dark Wings deck throwing a copy in, but really beyond that, yeah, it's just it's.
I can't see a Dark Wings playing it because they're probably playing like three Sand Snakes, right?
I don't know.
They're playing the last one. Yeah, I agree. So maybe four Sand Snakes? Yeah.
And running the location? Turn anybody into one? No, just...
No. No, I don't think so.
On to another unique Martell location. Also one cost. This one is the Red Mountain Keep. It is a stronghold, because that matters a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a dominance phase action. Kneel Red Mountain Keep to shuffle a Sand Snake character from your dead pile back into your deck. Yeah, I mean, I think there could be some interesting Sand Snake stuff. Nothing that's going to, like, blow other decks out of the water, but it does have some fun interactions with Nymeria, and, you know, I don't know. We might see a Sand Snake deck use it to some effect, but probably not.
There would have to be a lot more Sand Snakes for this to be good.
Even then, you have to be running multiple copies of a unique for this to really matter. Unless there's a reason to keep the Sand Snakes out of your dead pile, like, say, No Use for Grief or something like that. But outside of No Use for Grief, I actually think I can't see this scene play. And it's not that the effect is all that bad, it's just that all it's doing is slightly increasing the odds that you'll draw that
draw
Sand Snake
it, yeah.
again. And that's just not enough for a card to do at this point, which is a shame because it's really, really nice art.
Yeah, the art is fantastic. I'd have to agree with that.
Yeah, there'd have to be some other crazy Sand Snake synergy coming down the road for me to see this in a deck.
There has to be some unique Sand Snake that has its own leave play effect or something like that that I really want to get back into play.
So it's the same story as Rainbow Guard, just too little, too late?
Yep.
I mean, pretty
even less.
Even less. But
Rainbow Guard could be playable on their own. Some of them.
All right, that's John.
True. A new Maester Vaiman, cost 3. He has 2 icons: an intrigue and a power. He has the Learned Crest. He's of course Stark. He's House Tully and a Maester. He has the following limited response. After you win a challenge in which at least one House Tully character participated, reveal the top card of your deck and add it to your hand. Yes, please. That is an awesome effect. Getting cards is good. He's a Tully, so he can participate. He's at least as good as Vaiman, so I think he'll see about as much play.
He's exactly as good as Vaiman, seeing as he is Vaiman. I think you mean Lewin?
Lewin.
They each have their advantages. Being 3 strength can make a pretty big difference, and not being a limited response can make a pretty big difference.
But it's not guaranteed to get a card. This is guaranteed.
This is guaranteed card. That's what I just
learned. Learned Crest is good.
And this one is easier to trigger. He doesn't have to participate himself, and he's a Maester. Yeah. I would say that the only drawback is that I actually, more so than most, really like the other Vaiman. The one that can cancel effects.
Cancel,
I have had some expert players play that against me to great effect.
Versus Live 2?
Versus Live 2, exactly. At the gates, turn 1, search for the other Vaiman, and then neuter my Live 2. So that other Vaiman is underrated. People put him in just because he's the right cost slot and, you know, got an intrigue icon. But this Vaiman is really good.
I think we're going to see this Vymon in a lot of decks, because I don't think we see the other Vymon in many.
I think we're going to see him in almost every Stark deck, really. That's not Dark Wings, Dark Words. The House Tully support is just fantastic. There's a lot of new cards coming up this cycle that are really just going to push that through a lot more. And I'm excited to see those Stark players really just abuse the crap out of this guy. I think he's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's good. And I think you're right. He'll be a one of in 80% of Stark decks.
Yeah. And Tully's a thing now. It really is.
It's a thing. And they've got draw now.
Yeah, but it's still not using River Run.
No. No.
All right, so I get another Tully. This is a unique Sir Desmond Grell. He's 2 cost, 2 strength for a mill monocon, House Tully, and a knight. With the ability challenges, choose a House Tully character. That character gains deadly until end of phase. Limit once per phase.
Awesome.
He is awesome.
And, so good.
You know, he's a monocon, and you know, you could yell at him for a bunch of other reasons, but he is a 2-cost knight. He's House Tully, and a surprise deadly like that, or not even surprise deadly.
I'm going to hate playing against this guy. Yeah. I don't play Stark myself, so that's why I'm booing, because this card is great.
It's, yeah. It really, really is. You declare a trick challenge with Lewin,
deadly.
And he says, wait, am I letting him get that draw, or am I blocking? I could win.
Somebody.
Oh, I'm losing someone.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, this is really good. again, he's a one of in 80, maybe more than 80% of Stark decks.
But in a Tully deck, you're probably running 2 of them. Like he's,
probably.
He's
yeah.
Really good.
I mean, that deadly is so powerful for Stark, especially with all their target removal and kill effects. Pile on the deadly and
yeah.
There's not a thing your opponent can do.
So much disagreement.
I know.
I guess we're Jacob and the Blackfish's Vanguard then.
Okay, so Blackfish's Vanguard. It's a 5-cost, non-unique character. It is House Tully, of course, and an army. It is 5 strength. Military power icon with the text, no attachments, renown, deadly, and plus X initiative. X is the number of House Tully characters you control. Sick. This guy is sick.
See, a lot of people don't like him, but I agree with you.
Unfortunately, I do too. I'm sick of him.
It's really disgusting how much love House Tully has gotten in comparison to, say, the Sand Snakes. Renown and Deadly on a non-unique character is just bonkers good.
It's what Stark needed to speed things up for them in some cases.
Did they really need that, though? It's my point. It's so good.
And the initiative. I mean, people underestimate that. That is going to make a big difference.
That's going to mean you can comfortably play a Bay of Ice. I mean, that's going to be +2/+3 initiative. That makes a huge difference. Yeah, I mean, the last Tully army, it was so not memorable, I already forgot what it was. The one that your Tullys can't be targeted by opponents' triggered effects. The one from a chapter back ago.
Oh, yeah, that was really bad. This is amazing, though.
They're all immune or something.
Raven Tree Elite, that's what it was. Yeah, 6-cost. Nowhere near, I said it was maybe my 11th favorite Stark army off the top of my head. This one's much, much better. I mean, after your Northern Cavalry flanks, you can seriously consider him.
Absolutely.
Rather than the fleets or alongside or depending on how you want to do it. He's up at that caliber.
Yeah, he might even go in instead of Northern Cavalry flanks if the meta has a lot of no agendas.
Yeah, the cost difference borderline for that. But, I mean, he's up there. You're not far wrong.
I'm not wrong at all. There's a lot of no agendas.
Yeah. I mean, you're right, John. The number of no agendas makes the flank less appealing.
Pay 4 for 5 than 5 for 5. I guess.
But deadly, renown, and...
Get renown.
Renown's an ad, and the
no
initiative.
No war crest.
No war crest, that's true. So you trade the crest for renown. I still think it's worth it. I still think you'll see it even in decks that aren't House Tully themed.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, as we're agreeing on that, what are we on to now?
Rakiro?
Rakaro.
Rakaro, thank you. The Thraki Queen's Guard, 3 cost, military and power icon. He has stealth. He has a challenge action. Choose a Thraki character. That character gains stealth until the end of phase. Yeah, he's all right. I mean,
kind of mirroring that Rainbow Guard guy, only doing it a lot more effectively, I think.
And there's a lot more good Dothraki, so...
Exactly.
he'll slot in for sure into a Dothraki deck.
What's the one he's replacing? It's the one that if you win a military challenge, you discard a card?
Yeah, and he'll go in instead of that.
He'll go in instead of that, comfortably. And, yeah, I mean, stealth is good. Not as good as the surprise deadly. But then again, they don't have intrigue presence like Stark does now, so...
He's got a Warcrest, and that's pretty important to Thraki, so...
Yeah, the other one did too, though, so he's fine. Yeah. He's solid.
But are a lot of Dothraki decks running the Warcrest defense? They have room for
no,
it.
But they can. So you always have to play against them as if they were.
I've seen a lot that are running like one ofs just to mess
with
people.
Yeah, on a price of wars and stuff.
Yeah, it's got some synergy there. I feel like I should disagree, but I don't think that I can because again, he's a good card.
Okay. Before we talk about the next card, I want everyone just to predict the art and tell me what you see. Does it look like one lady is having sex with the other lady?
No.
Yes, that's what's happening there. Look at the face of Daenerys, and she's got like her hands on her. Kind of looks like I know she's combing.
It's very relaxed,
but it looks like it's like one of the hands like on her hip.
The artist is glad you appreciated the.
No, she's sitting down. Her hips nowhere over in that direction.
You think that's her sitting down? I don't know. I think if you kind of pretend she's bent over instead, you get this image, like the hair and the lady from... Yeah, I can't get it out of my head.
All right, so this is Jiki, unique one-cost Dothraki Handmaiden ally, one strength intrigue monocon. This is part of the set, because we already saw Eri. If Jiki would be killed, you may instead attach her to a Targaryen character as a handmaiden attachment with a text, gains an intrigue icon, and does not kneel to attack during intrigue challenges. This is an auto-include. Just like the other one, these things are bonkers good. If you're not including one of them, you're doing something wrong. If you're not including two of them, well, you might be all right. But you better have a reason.
Exactly.
Yeah, you better have a good reason.
Yeah, they're so good. You know, these handmaiden attachments are a huge reason why, in addition to just the Targ decks performing well, that we got the FAQ update with Dany being restricted.
I agree.
You know, with her not being restricted and having access to these, it just gets insane. And it's insane even with her restricted.
Without Dany existing, this is still phenomenal. You know, the last one could give Hyatt Pri another challenge. This one here can give a lot of important characters an important challenge. Even if they already have the icon, not kneeling to attack is great,
new
considering
Drogo.
All it is claim fodder. You soaked up a claim, and then you give some character not kneeling. This is insane.
Yeah, they're so good.
I don't understand
not,
how
it's not
doesn't
even
have a
response. I don't know why it's not a response. It can't even be canceled. It's a passive. It's so good. Yeah, so good.
Well, you could always discard, and she is an ally. So you play her, and then you dissension her.
Sure.
Right?
They'll play their little copy later.
And then they'll play their second copy later.
Well, exactly.
You waste a dissension on a one-cost ally. I mean, it's not a waste, because she's amazing, but...
Well,
it feels like a waste.
I'm just pointing out that it is possible.
And she's a Thraki, which can come in handy, too. Like, this is... All right, let's go from possibly the best card in the set to the worst.
Yeah, and I get stuck with definitely the worst card in the pack. This is Veus Tel'Loro. It is a 4-cost unique location. House Targaryen only.
All these things are bad yet. That's the bad part.
Limited. Ah, so bad.
It is limited, and during military challenges, the claim value on your revealed plot card is increased by 1, and it has
it
the straight, because that
not matters. Limited, it would be okay.
Yeah, because then you could hot it. But
exactly.
You can't House of Dreams it, and that's its downfall, and it will never see play forever and ever because of that.
Even if you put it in your deck, you'll never be able to play it.
Exactly.
What was the other one? When we saw the first one of these, Veus Tel'Loro, I basically said the same thing. You know, the card might be playable if it hadn't been limited. And this one, even if it wasn't limited, it wouldn't be playable. It would only be House of Dreamsable.
Right. And they put limited in there on purpose. So they obviously did not want people to House of Dreams it. So it just kind of makes you wonder, why is it in the game at all? I just don't... And even the effect is not a 4 gold location effect. It's maybe a 3, but really probably just a 2.
Yeah.
And just nothing is good about this card.
Maybe if it wasn't House Targaryen, someone else like Greyjoy could figure out ways to cheat it in, or I don't know.
Conquesting might somehow. I don't know.
Yeah, Conquest, use refurbished alts.
But fine art.
Still, sure. You can watch the art burn when you put the card in the fire, because you don't have to worry about having played it.
John, next card then?
Veil Informant. So he's cost 2, 1 strength, stealth, he's neutral. He has the following text. Veil Informant gets +1 strength for each plot card in your used pile. And you know what? I kind of like this guy. I don't think he's great. I think he's interesting, though. I like the design. It really follows with that whole castle theme. You know, late game, you might get a 3 strength for 2 cost. I don't think he's going to be in a lot of decks, but I think he's neat.
Yeah, you know, I like that he has stealth. I think that's really the only thing he has going for him. You know, there's talk about how it's like Silent Sisters because the strength, you know, as the game goes on, it's higher. But the stealth makes him better than Silent Sisters, in my opinion. You might run into him. I don't know if I will be including him in decks. It's interesting. I like him. He's certainly good in draft, but I don't know. I don't think we'll see much play outside of that.
I think the big advantage of Silent Sisters is that they can hide in shadows until after Valor. This card can't. And so it gets stealth to compensate, and, you know, maybe. But I think you guys are about right. Neat effect. I'm intrigued by this. I also have absolutely no idea why a Veil Informant is a gardener or whatever. Are there many roses in the Veil?
I think he's, listening through the window to, then pass the information on or something. I don't know.
I think he's posing as a gardener in order to listen through the window. Come on now. Tomorrow he's going to be the butler. The day after he'll be
You know what would make this card better? If it were unique. No, probably not. But I was thinking for the next card.
Oh, all right.
John?
The Moon Door. It's a 2-cost location. Neutral. I'll read this even though I did fail form of 2. It has attacks Neil the Moon Door and Neil a unique house Aaron character to choose and kill a character with printed cost 3 or lower. I mean, that effect is awesome. And if there's a whole bunch of cheap Aaron characters later somewhere, this could be pretty effective. I'm guessing we're not going to see much play with it, though.
No, it's got to be a unique House Aaron.
Seen Mord spoiled. We've got Robert Aaron, and he's cheap.
That's going to be cheap House Aaron.
We've got Lysa Aaron. And all of those are cheap.
And
Maya Stone, and we've actually got Sir Robar Royce.
Robar Royce, that's right. Yep. So, I guess there's some options there.
There's a janky build that we can get out of this, is what you're saying.
Yeah. It's neutral, so you can't House of Dreams it. It's unique, so running multiple copies is not a great idea. However, that effect is pretty powerful.
What did we say about Sir Ilyan Payne, who essentially does the same thing?
Except Sir Ilyan Payne's a 4-cost, while here you could potentially kneel a 2-cost.
Playing 2 for the location, then 2-cost for the unique guy, it's still 4. It's the kneeling in dominance, and that's just such a tough action to put in your deck. We might see it, people wanting to play around with the new House Aaron stuff. They might even get good use out of it, but overall, I don't think it's worth a slot.
I'm going to agree.
I agree.
All right, so I get the first of 2 plots. This is a 4-7-1. It's Holding Council. It's a castle plot. And after this plot is placed in your use pile, put a card with printed cost 1 or lower into play from your hand. So a nice solid set of stats. The effect doesn't sound like that much, but there are actually a couple of neat things it can do.
There are some neat things it can do.
It can drop a raven in play if you probably played it earlier anyway. It can put things that are out of house, so that's...
Out of house, it can put limited cards out if you've got multiple in your hand or a lot in the deck. It can bypass some stuff. I like the effect a lot.
You like the effect a lot?
Yeah, I think it's kind of something you'll probably only see in a deck that's gonna run all of the castles as in a row. But It's a cool effect. I think it has some fun plays that you can mess with. It has good gold, good initiative. It's like certainly not a bad plot.
No. The stat line is awesome. Like 4-7-1 is great. The effect I'm kind of humming and hoeing over because, you know, it's great that people say, oh yeah, you can get the out of house stuff and all that, but that means you're running that out of house stuff for this plot. You could draw it after you use it. You're probably running more than one of these out of house things. So I'm not quite sold on it.
Yeah, and it's been brought up too of, you know, running the task plots. So now you go get your out of house location or attachment or whatever it is to make your jank work.
Okay.
But then on turn three, you get to put it into play, right?
So you got task two.
Well, it could be turn two if you open with this, right? Because you open with this, then you flip your task plot. Yeah. Task happens, so you get your search, and then this happens.
Yeah, you're right. The one revealed will resolve first. So actually,
so turn two.
That does change my opinion on it for the Ravens, because you can search the Raven and drop it in play on that second turn without having.
Yeah, but you would have just been better off to search the Raven and play it right away, probably, in most cases.
On the first turn, it depends on whether you were able to win initiative on that first turn. I mean, a Raven that was only going to affect you, a white Raven that was only going to affect you on the first turn because you were going to lose initiative, isn't all that useful.
You're risking it, putting it in your hand. Well, maybe they can't win the intrigue against you. Maybe they can.
But you don't have to. You play whatever plot you want on the first turn. You play Holding Council on the first turn, and then you play the Raven search on the second turn. Search for the Raven is the one revealed, and then
drop it. Yeah. I'm not that excited about that.
I like it. I think it's neat. You know, I think it's neat that you can do those fun little interactions with it, and, you know, it's taking castles, I think, to maybe not the next level, but it's certainly making them interesting, and I think we'll see this plot quite a bit, actually.
You know, can't take credit for this because I was just reading Adam's comment here, but the idea of dropping a burned and pillaged on someone is actually surprisingly satisfying.
Again, brought up.
Not sure it's reason enough to run this plot, and I think if your description was you'll be using this in a deck where you're running a lot of castles, we still haven't seen that deck hold its own yet, so I'm going to have to relegate this to neat but unexceptional.
Well, I mean,
but
if you're
intriguing.
If your draw was going to be like Pyro's Cash as you restrict it, you could task for Pyro's Cash, drop it in, so you'd always have it by turn two.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it has plays, and I think that's really all that you want to look for in a plot, especially if you're wanting to try something new. You want to look at, okay, what's this fun little interaction that I can do? And, you know, just the fact that we've come up with so many, I think, makes it at least a fun card, probably a good one.
Actually, again, I'm thinking Build-A-Barrack. I can see some uses for this in Build-A-Barrack.
Build-A-Barrack loves this.
Build-A-Barrack does love this. Okay, all right. I'm gonna play with this, think about it a little more. But if it's a plot that makes me think, you're right, I like
it. That's all I'm saying. I like it. I think it will certainly help make castles a thing, as they say.
And I think we must have screwed up, because again, the 20th card should be John. And
it's a dead smoke.
John did two in a row, and then something happened. I don't know.
It happens. All right, so we can end with John then.
It's a dead Simone.
That's all you have to say about it.
That's it. That's the end.
Yeah.
No comments. We had it on the last podcast, right? We talked about it with Simone.
But we were talking about it with Simone, so we were flattering and generous and all sorts of other things.
Okay, there's three things I really, really like about this plot. I like the
dead
idea.
Simone.
Such a high prize. That's my last one, Alex.
Okay, all right, fine.
It's a high prize, which allows for all this rush enabling. It actually has a really interesting and powerful effect, and Simone's dead on it. And it's not that I would ever think something bad for Simone. He's an awesome guy and a really great player, but I like the fact that it makes me feel like I just won versus him. And anytime you can win versus Simone, that's an accomplishment, so I'm going to keep that card.
To give it the same sort of review as I did for the last card, I would say this plot makes me think about ways to use it. And I like that in a card. I have toyed with it over the last couple of days, and it still hasn't quite clicked the way I want it to. But I haven't given up on it yet. There's always just a bit of a timing issue where I'm like, I'm not convinced I can play this phase. bit hard for that turn one before you have some of your stand effects going, or if your opponent plays a king or whatever the case is, depending on the house you're building this out. So I can't really speak to its overall power level, but I can say that I'm going to keep trying for a while yet.
Yeah, you know, it's a very interesting effect. I think some players will have fun tinkering with it, but I myself am not convinced that it's quite as good as a lot of people have been making it out to be. People can crucify me if they want. You know, price 3 can be positive, as John said, can also be very negative. We've had cards, sure, it's House Lannister only, that can do the same thing, and it never, ever sees play. You know, it's really good in, like, Barra decks. I think Barra can find some abuse for it. But beyond that, it really doesn't worry me if my opponent plays this.
You know, you could probably use this in Fast and the Furious as well, the Canadian Nationals deck with Heir to the Iron Throne.
That might be a pretty good fit.
You know, I know there's a deck out there that's just going to prove me wrong. There's going to be something that can totally, you know, jank it out, but I don't know. Overall, I just am not that excited about a plot that has use in, like, one particularly janky deck.
So the pack overall, the biggest impression that I get from this Veilman pack is, I would call this the limited response pack. This is the one in which we saw a bunch of limited responses. Vyman and Gunther and Nymeria, all of which we said were great limited responses.
Yeah, that's the difference. We've seen quite a few limited responses in the other packs, but this one, they really are all quite good.
Yes.
I mean, this begins to make me think, if they can do this with one more pack, then limited responses might be a real decision in almost every house.
I would love that. I would love if they had, like, it's too bad they didn't have this type of decision with limited responses a couple years ago, because it would have been awesome if they had used this a little bit more, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lannister's always had to make a choice, but beyond that, there's not really any other.
And Lannister really only had to make one choice.
True.
I mean, you could have run the Dockside Brothel if you're James, but that's about the only person I know who's ever run that card.
Yeah, overall, great pack. Just want to say thanks for having me on.
We're joined today to promote an event by Tyler from Florida.
Best known for winning a regional with the Starken A deck, and I believe he crushed Aaron with that deck. Is that true, Tyler?
Yes. I had them fly down last year. I invited them both, him and Sandy, I should say, to fly down to Florida and participate in our regional. It's a whole weekend of events, and Friday was the draft, and, man, they got hammered. And they were a little hungover Saturday for the joust, and that was my plan, is to get them drunk. Oh.
Don't give them excuses.
Yeah,
I crushed Aaron. Just say that. We'll edit that in. That'll be perfect.
Well, I crushed Aaron and Sandy in the cut. But
if I understand correctly, you guys have another 3-day gaming extravaganza coming up this weekend.
Yes, it's called Crucible. This is the fourth year. It started off as a War Machine tournament with 50 guys, and it's grown every year. They're expecting about 250 total between all the different games and events going on.
And so how does Thrones fit into that?
Well, it's Friday afternoon, night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. Friday afternoon, Melee is played, and Saturday morning is Game of Thrones Joust. And then Sunday is going to be draft tournaments. Just nothing official. We'll just pick up draft tournaments throughout the day.
So is this still affiliated with, Dogs of War Gaming that ran the regional last year?
Yes, Jesus has joined Greg Russell. He set up the War Machine and all the different miniature games. And this year he wanted to add all the LCGs and the X-Wing. And Jesus is putting on the tournaments for all the LCGs and X-Wing. And he's came up with his own trophies.
So these are being called state championships. Are they officially, are they a store championship, or are they...
No, they are not a store championship. He has already done his store championships separately, and this is just his own thing, state championship. He came up with play mats for each game, He has his own playmat for Game of Thrones. The last I saw, it's going to be when Balerion the Black starts burning down Harrenhal. That is the playmat, and it looks fantastic.
Oh, nice.
Wow, so you got the art for all these playmats, too.
Yeah, and it's going to be a major event, and the times that I'm not going to be playing in Game of Thrones or Conquest, I'm going to be demoing the two games. Unfortunately, the demo for Game of Thrones is probably going to be very limited since it's coming towards its end, but I will definitely be promoting 2.0 while we're there.
Yeah, I can't wait for 2.0.
So that sounds like a huge amount of work for poor Jesus there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he loves, he just loves games. He's the owner of the store in Palm Bay, Florida. He plays basically any game that he gets into his store, he's going to try it at some point. And he can tell you board games, card games, miniatures, and he can talk to you for hours on each of these things. And he loves LCGs. He's actually really good at Netrunner, and he loves these LCGs. And he puts a lot of his own money into them just to grow them in Florida.
Well, that's the kind of people we need promoting Thrones and promoting Thrones 2.0 when it comes out. So I'm extremely glad to hear this new state championship come up.
Absolutely. I can't wait. It's going to be a blast.
Yeah, so closing remarks. In addition to that report from Tyler of their upcoming Florida state championships, we have a couple other things we've been asked to promote.
I'd like to promote a SC that's happening in Lebanon, Indiana on February 28th at Friendly City Games starting at noon.
Lebanon, Indiana, not the other Lebanon. Okay, all right.
Yeah, that's exciting. If it was in the other Lebanon, it'd actually be really, really cool. Now it's just, you know, minorly cool.
That could be the city slogan. No, I don't know. Minorly cool. Another one that has been posted in the upcoming events on the Annals is a tournament in the Atlanta area in Marietta, Georgia. And that's supposedly on the 25th. So that would actually be on Wednesday.
A power to midweek tournaments.
But if you do want more details on that tournament in Marietta, Georgia, contact smcan24@gmail.com.
And that's why you want to put your tournaments ahead of time in the Annals.
Yeah, it's easy promotion. Any other closing comments, John?
No, I've been having a great time playing 1.0 over the last month. I feel like it's in a really good place now with the new FAQ, and I'm excited to get to, you know, regionals and Gen Con. We got two regionals in Ottawa, one in Montreal I'm going to go to for sure. I'm pumped.
I have to say, this has been a really good period for deck building. And I don't know if that's just because with the threat of 2.0, you're willing to experiment some crazier stuff in the parting months, or whether it's the newest FAQ, or whether it's just these very powerful cards that have been put into the game, knowing it was going to be the end of the game, so many of which are actually pushing old ideas to the forefront. And I'm not sure which of those things is the driving force, but I have actually built two or three decks in the last week, none of which are Tier 1, but all of which have that potential with tweaking, and none of them were decks I would have considered building before.
Yeah, we've seen such a large array of decks now. I totally agree, and I think there's all these new concepts coming forward, which is awesome. And you probably hit the nail on the head that it's part because of these new chapter packs that you couldn't really do if you were planning to continue the game on. But in this environment, they're just the thing that we needed to have a really
good
great stellar end, yeah, to 1.0.
And a great stellar end to the podcast.
What?
The end. Today's episode, not the cast.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
People really love him on he got cards. He's got a 4.5.
Yeah, yeah. So what does that say about people?
They're wrong.